Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 260 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. Don't forget, Dudes and Beer is now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a fan of podcasting like me, love podcasting, thinking about starting up a podcast, already have a podcast, stop on by PodcastCadet.com. That is where you can get your own package, one-on-one time consultation with podcast professionals, everything from hosts to branding professionals, distribution professionals, people to help you be better hosts and teach you to be improvisational. All that and more at podcastcadet.com. Use the code DUDES20 on your way out the door to save 20% off your entire purchase. Our awesome guest tonight. Oh, by the way, welcome WMLD. I haven't said that in a little while, but God, I love the fact that I am on the air in Poughkeepsie. Welcome WMLD listeners. This is a very, very special episode for you guys because y'all have not had the opportunity to hear a whole lot of the amazing, the great Mike Turber of 5x5 News. I just had the opportunity last night to be on an episode of 5x5. It was great. It was super fun. We were kind of cracking the nut a little bit more of ATIP, UAVs, Tic Tacs, gimbal, fast mover, all that kind of good stuff. We will be getting into the power plant behind that technology tonight. We will be talking about so many more articles that have come out talking about just literally disclosure. I mean, there's no other way to put it. This stuff is out there now. Whether it's our craft, whether it's alien, we aren't exact. Well, Mike and I are pretty sure we'll be getting into that. Mike Turber will be coming on the show here in just a moment. I have a clip, actually, that Mike put out on 5x5 News all of a few days ago that is a great video from Skunkworks itself. This is, and granted, you would think that somebody like Skunkworks would not have a full-on, like, here's a product video and what we're working on because we're a black budget department. But believe it or not, they have them. And Mike put one out. It's a great, great piece talking about the technologies that could be used to drive the technology behind things like Tic Tac, gimbal, fast mover, these UAVs, unidentified aerial vehicles, the new code term for UFOs in the U.S. military and intelligentsia organizations. So let's hear exactly what Skunkworks has to say about the possibility of, like, literally 10 by 10 room size and larger fusion reactors.
"50 years ago, when people were super excited about nuclear power, we tried to put it on everything, including airplanes. There were some big operational issues that wasn't safe. Fusion is a much safer option. A next generation of airplanes that doesn't rely on fuel and can just stay aloft, unlimited range, unlimited endurance. That's what nuclear fusion can do for an airplane. So nuclear fusion is the process by which the sun works. If you take a gas and you heat it up, eventually it separates into its ions and electrons. When the ions get hot enough, they can overcome their mutual repulsion and collide, fuse into one piece. When they do that, they release a lot of energy, a million times more powerful than a chemical reaction, for example. What we're trying to do is control that reaction here on Earth. We put it in a magnetic bottle that can contain the high temperatures. You need hundreds of millions of degrees. We can release in a controlled fashion that energy. We think we have a very robust strategy going forward that has potential for success. What this concept does is it's a high beta concept, which means we use a high fraction of the magnetic field pressure. We use all of its potential. And that means we can make our devices 10 times smaller. So instead of something the size of a building, we have something the size of a large truck. The small is the reason we can do this quickly. If something's small, you can build up momentum, you can develop it fast. It doesn't take 5 years to design it, it takes 3 months. We can design it, build it, test it in under a year. We can do several of these cycles, and we think we can get to a prototype in 5 years. Every time you do plasma physics, you learn something new. And that's why this is a high-risk, high-payoff endeavor. That's what we're doing here, is testing that concept out to see if it really holds the promise that it appears to. And as a defense company, our increasing mission is to enhance global security, and this is how we do that in the energy realm. The world already does 40 gigawatts of gas turbines a year. The gas line going into that gas turbine, we're going to replace that with a heat exchanger coming off our fusion reactor. We basically use the gas turbine infrastructure completely. We partner with one of those companies, and we ship fusion-powered turbine plants around the world, and we expand that technology. Gas turbines are a huge improvement over other technologies in terms of climate change, but they're only a 50% improvement. We take it all the way. So no emissions, safe operation, proliferation-free. That means we can ship it to the whole world with a good conscience. Now, the old promise of atoms for peace was a noble one, but ultimately flawed because the technology wasn't right for it. We can achieve that grand vision and bring clean power to the world. The true atomic age can start. 10 years, we have great military vehicles. 20 years, we have clean power for the world. This isn't online by 2100. This is online by the time I can't even retire after we finish this. No, I still have to find another job after this is done.
And that's my favorite part right there, where he literally says, we've got great machines of war going on. We'll get to the peace. We'll get to the peace thing. You know, we aren't saying there's not going to be peace and free energy and free power for the world. It's just, first, we got to finish up all these weapons. So welcome to the show, Mike Turber, 5x5 News. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing most splendiferous, which is my new word of the day.
I like it. I like it. It sounds like a $10 word there.
Yeah, I got it on sale. It was $9.80, I think, so I saved
nice.
A little bit.
Well, you know, we really, really started rabbit-holing last night into this ATIP situation, and Luis Elizondo, the leaked tape from the Nimitz, the footage that went missing from the Nimitz, just the timeline of this whole thing. There was another bit in there that I caught on to a little while ago, and that was that he was saying that they could, from design to prototype in 1 year.
Right.
One of these, and he's talking about this fusion reactor technology, people, that they can basically build a generation of this every year. You know?
Yeah, and over time, the size has come down dramatically. Once they you know, basically cracked the nut, so to speak, and the holy grail of fusion reaction now, is actually to produce more energy than it consumes.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And you know what struck me was that timeline that he gave of 1 year we could do this, and the fact of, hey, from the time we're starting this, I won't even be able to retire. This will have picked up and moved on to the next generation by the time I'm done working on it, like within a decade.
Right.
How long was the ATIP program?
I think it was 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
There's still some question about that and whether or not that program is still going on.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely going on in another iteration. Definitely.
Yes, I
like
agree.
No doubt about that. They did not stop. All they did was change the base of operations, change the, it's a typical status quo situation. You want to keep the operation going, but there's no way you're going to get the funding because you said we need this long for funding.
Right. And keep in mind that when Lou came on board to ATIP, he actually slipped. I don't know if it was a Freudian slip or what, but he did state that he took over the program from another person.
Yes, he did.
So in saying that, he basically revealed that there was either an iteration of this program before he came on board.
Yeah.
Or the other person who was, I guess, the lead of ATIP. Was not there very long because it seemed like, Lou was the first choice to go on board and what have you. But, there's a lot more questions to this story as it goes along than there are answers, it appears. And I don't think we're ever going to get a straight answer out of, you know, the powers that be. So we have to pretty much do all the digging ourselves and come up with our, you know, our own conclusions as to what's actually going on here.
Well, and it's really a little bit of sifting more than it is digging now, Mike. Right. You know, I would say 5 years ago, almost when I started this show, there would have been a little bit of digging involved. But with the data dumps that came out from the CIA and FBI prior to the revelation of ATIP to the public, which, like we said, was not the beginning of ATIP. It was actually well after the end of ATIP, a good like 4 years after the end of ATIP. And you can just about be guaranteed that that was probably close to a 10-year long program. Would I be mistaken in saying that most programs of that sort are long term within the 5 to 10 year range?
I would say so. And I think I think that was agreed to even by Lou himself when he said, I can't remember what interview he was doing, but he had been there for doing that for 10 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with that. 100%.
Yeah, he'd at least been in the field of study, not necessarily in ATIP, but doing that specifically for the government for 10 years and then became part of the ATIP program within that time frame.
It is interesting. I would love to, have access to some of the reports that are out there. There are more reports that I think it was a total of 38 reports that they did. So, obviously we want more of those reports, and some of the reports that I've gotten wind of actually state that there's some more stories out there that may even be more exciting than what we are witnessing right now with the Nimitz encounters and the situation up Jacksonville. So,
yeah, exactly.
Sit back and enjoy the ride, folks.
Well, it's definitely a whole new age, with just the fact of it's got to come out at some point that this technology exists, whether or not it came from an extraterrestrial source to begin with. Mike and I both personally hold the fact that it's definitely ours. Like, this technology that we are seeing in these videos, this is our technology. There was a great article that came out a couple days ago in the International Business Times, quoting a UFO researcher who was saying that the Tic Tacs specifically, and Gimbal as well, seem to be exhibiting AI type behavior, almost human behavior, in the way that they didn't try to obscure their presence. They really kind of blasted their presence out. They actively played a game of hide and go seek and chase with the aircraft. And like you mentioned in your show last night in 5x5 News, Mike, the fact that they did not take proper evasive action in any of these cases, not a single one that is on video, do you see them aggressively chasing it down, trying to make radio contact, saying you are in U.S. airspace? None of that. And that would absolutely be protocol, man. This is unidentified aircraft. Please identify yourself. You have crossed into United States airspace. You know,
and even when you watch,
that's not just a movie thing, folks.
Not exactly. And even when you watch the actual videos themselves, the heads up display part of the video that you're watching for the FLIR and everything actually shows you the speed of the aircraft.
Yeah.
As it's going out to intercept these objects, and the speed of the aircraft is say 250 knots.
It's a straight cruising speed. It's not an intercept speed. It's not a dogfight speed or anything.
Right. And after Captain Fravor or Commander Fravor, after he engaged the Tic Tac at the one location, and then he was ordered back to the ship after he was told that the Tic Tac had just, within a matter of a second or two, reappeared at the cap point, which is a virtual place in the sky for the pilots to meet at to go do whatever they're going to do.
Yeah,
and he was ordered back to the Nimitz, and not over to the cap point. So that makes sense, I guess, because he didn't have any loadout on board or anything. So they waited until the next flight went out, and that's the flight where Chad Underwood gets the video that we see on the FLIR.
Yeah.
And he wasn't exactly hauling ass to get over there either. So all of the flights were traveling at normal speeds. And you would think that if this was of a actual concern, that they would have scrambled whatever from wherever.
And more than one. Whenever they scramble jets, it's not like, hey, let's scramble a fighter. There's always a wingman at a minimum.
Right.
At a minimum.
And then when you think about it this way, too. After Captain Commander Fravor came back to the Nimitz and they sent the next jet up, they keep in mind they had asked before if he had a loadout.
Yeah.
So they send up another plane without anything on it either.
That's right.
So
that's
right. They had weapons on board. There were weapons on board the aircraft here, but maybe not necessarily on the aircraft. And it may have took some time to do that or what have you. But these were normally scheduled flights that morning. It was just routine.
Going to come out and get your hours in flights.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, what I find amusing is when you look at the Vanguard program that was recently announced by the Air Force and everything, that kind of ties into what she was speaking about. It kind of makes sense when you have a program called Vanguard and Skyborg.
That's right.
You know, you have to kind of take this tongue in cheek a little bit because you have to wonder. I mean, as I'm reading it directly from the Air Force website, it says this: Skyborg will attempt to integrate autonomous and unmanned aerial vehicle technology with open mission systems to enable manned or unmanned teaming. And Skyborg seeks to deliver a prototype suite of technologies to enable autonomous UAVs with enhanced capabilities for Air Force missions. Now, I start to see, you know, the old
saying. It sounds like a lot of lame language, folks. But that's the beauty of open-ended language.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have the
ask any lawyer
kind of thing.
That means this program could do anything, and it's within the scope of the program.
Right. I think what we're finding is we're seeing this new technology, and then the Air Force and the Navy are scrambling behind the scenes to come up with some sort of excuse for it.
Yeah.
After the fact.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the patents that this guy, Salvatore Paez, I'm probably pronouncing his last name wrong, has done on behalf of the military or the Navy and per se, you know, you look at this list of patents that he has, mm-hmm. and you start to wonder what's going on here. Now, back in 2004, he patented a laser augmented turbojet propulsion system.
Oh.
That was for Northrop Grumman. Then, of course, the one we're all familiar with. He patented a craft using inertial mass reduction device. That's a fancy word for essentially anti-gravity.
Yep.
Then another one is electromagnetic field generator and method to generate an electromagnetic field. That was also for the Secretary of the Navy.
Yep.
Then a high-frequency gravitational wave generator. Now think about that one. High-frequency gravitational wave generator. Including a glass-filled shell with an outer shell surface. Probably looks like a Tic Tac. Then the last two are these. Plasma compression fusion device and a piezoelectricity-induced high-temperature superconductor. This one inventor invented all of this stuff. And totally, some of these fields are not related.
Yeah.
Or it would be very hard-pressed to find one guy who essentially
would have that many disciplines going on.
Yeah. So this guy invents a high temperature superconductor. He invented the plasma compression fusion device, an inertial or a gravitational wave generator, an inertial, you know, all of these different things are in so many different fields that it boggles the mind. This guy is the guy that needs to be interviewed.
Well, let's find him.
He's up in Maryland, supposedly, but there's even question. There's been some stuff going around now that if this guy actually exists or not.
Well, I'll ask it right now. I'm going to ask it early in the show, Mike, and I'm going to ask you to respond to something that I have heard said about you that I'm sure audience has heard said about you. And that is the concept of disinformation. Would it be the fact that maybe this is somebody who is putting out disinformation? Granted, you can't have a patent on something that like would not work.
Well, as it relates to me, I would simply say this, you know, don't take anything anyone says in about any subject, especially something controversial, on its face. Do some research yourself and find out, you know, if what they're telling you is the truth, which is a lot of this is easy to find out. And then keep in mind that what you look at, that what we are looking at, we may be looking at disinformation coming from the Navy, the Patent Office, the Sky Salvatore, all of these different things. So this could be a whole line of planned, you know, if they're doing a soft disclosure and they're doing it this way, it's really, you know, messing with our minds if that's what they're trying to do. And it would go back to even the individual who I had contact with back in 2005. Maybe that guy was setting me up for something for 10 years later or 15 years later. Well, I don't know. I seriously doubt that's the case because I know the guy personally. But
yeah,
there's a lot of information that's coming out that borderlines on science fiction.
Oh, absolutely.
And if people are looking at these and they're thinking, that's not even possible, this has got to be bogus, blah, blah, blah. But this is coming to us from the Secretary of the Navy.
Yeah.
This is coming to us from the highest echelons in the American government, to the point where if it was found out that they were doing this to mess with our minds, you know, there would be some repercussions.
There would be some hell to pay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This would be well beyond Iran-Contra. This would be well beyond Air America, anything like that. Which are all absolutely proven programs.
Would you say that Lou is the next Oliver North here or something?
You know, and that's something that we've spoken about both on air and off air, and I'd like to explore that a little bit this evening. But first, I really want to kind of get into this timeline of science once again, because going back to this video of, you know, we could be producing one of these a year. And just thinking about that metric math, you know, the same way that Moore's law works for computer chips and silicon, where it's like, okay, every 6 months, the capacity and speed doubles. And that's why, like, what we get on the shelf is like 5 years old compared to what the military is using or compared to what the, you know, government contractors are using, that kind of stuff. It's proven with them that it eventually matriculates down to our market. It's how the internet worked, originally built for scientists and the military to be able to contact each other and talk regardless of the situation. Now we use it for looking at nudie pictures and getting into silly fights on Facebook.
Exactly.
And cat videos. At least there's cat videos still. But when you really start looking at this timeline, like that, the video clip that we played earlier, man, that was released in 2014. That was released at the end of the ATIP program. So if we're talking about the fact that they were working with the technology in that video, and like it didn't look like new stuff, you know, it looked like it had been through a few generations because it was easily the size of like a college chemistry lab that they were in working with a fusion reactor. You know,
I'm kind of missing some of what you're saying there because I'm barely hearing you on some of the stuff.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. You know, to me, looking at the timeline of technology and the growth of technology, especially the way the scientist was describing it, knowing the length of time that ATIP went on, I think it is definitely viable that these craft are ours by the very way that they were intercepted, by the very way that they were detected, by the fact that footage was taken from the Nimitz by people who were not ranking officers in the Air Force or the Navy.
Right, exactly.
You know, unknown dudes just came up to an Air Force fighter on a U.S. aircraft carrier and hauled away a black box. You know,
the things that just, they don't add up in several ways, but they do add up if you start throwing in the mix. If it was an alien spacecraft or if it was a craft from another nation, they would not follow the protocol that they did.
Exactly.
Obviously, it's and when the Air Force comes on board of a Navy ship and takes basically all of the data that relates to this event, that's unprecedented.
Yeah.
You know, so this is not a normal everyday occurrence. that happens. So if it was now, if you throw in what I've been bringing to the table, saying that this is a U.S. Air Force drone and that this was a DARPA / Air Force Research Laboratory project, and it has gone to the next generation of testing. You know, they did all the testing at Area 51. They did probably some testing out of Edwards in thereabouts. And these things were built at Plant 42. All of these things that I'm contending will make more sense than some of the other explanations that are out there. And the reason why I put that into play is because if you look at the situation, once Commander Fravor was ordered back to the aircraft carrier, these things were up there for days. This wasn't a isolated event where it happened. You only get a few seconds of video and then we're done. You know,
no, it had been almost a month of steady encounters. Almost a month.
And they as far as the phased array radar, they've been tracking these things for at least a week or so. I think the official account was November 10th was when they started, but I think it actually goes before that. And that was back at the 2004 incident off San Diego. And so they tracked several events of these craft coming down from, you know, dropping down from space or dropping down from near San Clemente Island, sure, flying at a normal rate of speed, not seemingly to be aggressive towards the carrier group. So they didn't pay them much mind. But once they did engage with the Tic Tac, then you would think a different protocol would go into play. Number one, the Pentagon would be on the line saying, hey, go shoot one of these down. Whatever you got to do, we'll send up extra assets to determine what these things are, because they apparently were still there.
Yeah.
So I have a large problem with this whole story. Once we realize that the object, you know, even if it just showed back up at the cap point, once someone got to the cap point after the initial two sightings and saw that the object was there, and you only send one guy, I mean, come on.
Yeah. One unarmed guy.
Yeah. So no one was concerned, and the upper, echelons of the Navy brass that were there on scene obviously were in the know. And they, even when they went to get the data, the person who was giving them the data was told to not, that they weren't there, to not log out the giving of the data bricks and what have you to them, to the Air Force personnel and so forth. So this was a cover up back then, but now that it's all coming back out, it seems like we're having all kinds of new technology that all of a sudden, since December 16th of 2017, when these videos were released to the media under questionable
pretense. You know,
yeah, exactly. So you have that come out. And then all of a sudden we see that months before that, the Navy had filed for a patent for a object that is similar to obviously the TR-3B and also this model here, which would be the Tic Tac model. It utilizes technology that's mentioned in that patent, but that was obviously back in 2004. So the craft had, you know, they've been in the air since the late 90s, obviously, through testing methods at Area 51 and various other places that they did the testing. Yeah. And then they, of course, instead of sending these objects over, you know, to see how China or Russia or whoever else would respond to them, naturally, you would test them on yourselves because you have a controlled environment. You don't have to worry about them being shot down. The pilots of these planes were on, you know, it's in a training situation. It's 8X before they go out to, you know, for their regular cruise. And so you have, you know, again, you have a controlled environment. And
well, in the known quantitative of what your equipment can already do and detect.
Right. And they had just upgraded the phased radar.
Yeah,
the Spy-1B radar was upgraded on the Nimitz just before this occurred. The same thing with the East Coast situation, the Roosevelt, that carrier group and their Aegis cruiser. I can't remember the name of the cruise that was there, but it had just had its phased array radar upgraded. So, you know, you have to see the pattern there. And these two or three videos were released, and in both situations, both aircraft carrier groups, both have just received major upgrades to their radar, and now all of a sudden they can see all of these objects. So,
yeah,
you know, who knows how long they are flying these things, you know, because they have the phased array radar that's upgraded. They can see them now. Maybe they've been flying them for years.
Yeah. And all these articles, folks, are on the Dudes and Beer post for this episode on dudesandbeer.com. The patents that we're talking about, like the TR-3B, that kind of stuff, are in the Dudes and Beer Knowledge Vault under Declassified Documents. But let's start getting into a little bit of the, I guess, the hole in the sieve of filters named Luis Elizondo. The man who first brought the ATIP program to public attention. And this is where, to me, things really start to not even unravel. They just straight fall apart. If you know any kind of actual protocol, and you are, I'm trying to remember, are you able to give out your DOD number?
My what?
DOD number? Anything
my
like
MOS
that?
Number?
Yeah.
My MOS is 205, and then the numbers behind it, you'd put 305070 and so forth. That gives you the level of specialty that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that, now that's the old. Now keep in mind, somebody's going to look that up and they're not going to find it right away. It's the, I went in the 80s. So
yeah,
you have to go back to the old AFS, the specialty codes, AFSC, the specialty codes that you have back then. So you'll find it probably listed somewhere. Some archive site would have it, but it's electronic intelligence operations is what that is.
And there's a reason I asked for that, folks. It may seem like something utterly random and jaggy to do. But the reason I did that is because of what I'm about to say. What Mike just told you shows you the fact that he's had these clearances before. He's been involved with programs and he knows protocol and the way things work. And that is proof enough for the pudding to me. And whenever you're looking at the case of Luis Elizondo, somebody who came in funded by a program under the federal government, leaked this information prior to it being authorized to national media, international media, CNN. And then goes off, joins the To the Stars Academy. And is still allowed to hold clearance.
Mm-hmm.
And is still and is brought back into a new program with right. to the Stars Academy, who is now working actively with the federal government to look into metamaterials, things like that. They purchased Linda Moulton Howell sold her piece of the supposed material from the Roswell crash to the Stars Academy for metamaterial testing, all that kind of stuff. So it's like suddenly this dude who made this major leak about a defunct, not declassified. That's notable right there, folks, that it was defunct, not declassified. They had not declassified that program yet. So the footage was not available for release when Luis put it out. So how does he possibly still hold a DOD clearance? How is he working for this private organization who is now working with the federal government and military in this research field? That to me says it, and it doesn't say to me that he's an agent of disinformation. It says that he is a straight up agent of information. He is somebody who is there to slowly disseminate this information.
That's... When you read the forms that was necessary for him to reduce the classification of the videos to a point where it could be released, you can find these online. And I have to say that John Greenwald over at the Black Vault,
he's great.
Through his FOIA request, he actually was able to obtain the 1910 forms, which you know, shout out to him. That was awesome. And the thing about it is when it's not necessarily ambiguous and vague, but there's some play with the language here as far as what is actually stated on that form.
Yeah.
But in a nutshell, what happened is Lou essentially requested that the videos be either declassified or the classification reduced. And in his wording to the person obviously doing the approval for the 1910, he used language that made whoever was reading it, whoever was going to give the approval, believe that this was going to be held within the confines of the DIA or the Office of the Undersecretary of the Navy, or is going to be kept under a joint partnership with an approved partner or vendor
research contractor.
Exactly.
Like a Bigelow Aerospace, something along those lines.
Exactly. And that of course wasn't done. So he effectively, he declassified these things down to a certain level, and then he checked them out to himself and took them with him when he left. I think his letter of resignation was on October 4th of 2017. And then, 2 months later, he releases the videos to the public via major media or mass media.
To and almost no avail.
Yeah, they did get coverage, but the coverage was kind of mixed, and it didn't really shock the system, so to speak.
No.
They were even trying to politicize this, saying that this was some Harry Reid / Bigelow Aerospace thing. And I guess they may have thought it was a hoax or a joke or whatever it was, but this is very real. And they even tried to do it again when the Area 51 was supposedly going to be, ran over. But the 1910 form, it very clearly states what he is to do or not to do with it, and clearly he violated that, which is a violation of national security and everything. And this guy, not only does he violate that, he doesn't get admonished for it, and in fact he gets rewarded for it, because the organization that he goes to work for, taking these videos with him that are still classified, gets a contract to work with the Army on the metamaterials and things of that nature. So
yeah,
it's rather bizarre, the whole situation. There's a lot of mystery here about what actually happened, but you have to keep in mind that the simplest equation here is that he took things that are classified out of the government, out of the DOD,
yep,
and then gave them to the public, and then does not get any repercussion whatsoever for this. In fact,
none.
It sounds like he got rewarded.
Yeah.
So
he's got another contract. Snowden doesn't have another contract.
No.
Pretty sure Chelsea Manning doesn't have another contract.
I don't think so. I don't think so. So I guess it was good that I went dark a couple months back or whatever, because I may have to release some information here pretty quick, because a lot of people have a lot of questions about me and me possibly being disinfobic. And like I said last night, if I'm disinfo, I sure need that check.
You owed a ton of money if you're a disinformation agent. You exactly. did not negotiate that contract properly, my friend. You need help.
Right,
you
exactly.
let me know.
That would be the quickest way to destroy any relationships that anyone may have, tried to, put together here. But, I didn't come into this in the beginning or anything like that. I waited a couple of years. I was hoping that this would take some traction or what have you.
Yeah.
When I saw that it was going just about to go sideways with some of the other theories and stuff that's coming out, and I get it. There might be some truth in all of this. I mean, my information may not be 100% correct, and I guarantee you it probably isn't 100% correct. But I can state that it's probably closer to the absolute truth than what I've seen in some cases. But the thing about this is, this case has not taken on that weird aura, of this is a full disclosure. We got aliens coming. They're going to be here in September 13th of 2025. Write that date down. That might actually occur. And so forth. So you have what's coming out now. You have to take Occam's razor to this and bring everything down to the simplest thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's quite clear what this is. It's obviously our technology. If you need all the evidence, on Wednesday night on my show, I'm going to put this in a more visual format to show everybody what it is that we're talking about here, that we're not just, we're not just talking about this. We have the documents to back all this up, and to show people that, look, all of these technologies have been recently patented by the Navy. And all of this information came out since December of 2017. And if all you have to do is just by preponderance of the evidence, put it up on the wall and say, what makes more sense? Is this a soft disclosure? Yeah, it's a soft disclosure.
Absolutely.
Of some kind. But we don't know what we're really disclosing yet, but we'll be finding out.
I think we've got a couple of things that we are disclosing there. The only way that we would be able to achieve anything near that speed would literally be some sort of gravitational wave.
Right.
some sort of great attractant, basically, where we are taking a point in space, concentrating a point of gravity there, and basically pulling an object toward it.
Right.
And the only way we would be able to concentrate that kind of power would be through fusion. So I think we've got a couple of technologies that they're getting ready to at least soft disclose a little bit more. I think all the soft disclosure with UFOs between the CIA, FBI, and the media led to this, and this is leading to that disclosure. That's just what I'm seeing.
And as you started the show off with the compact fusion reactor that's being worked on by Lockheed, if you think about the words that were said there, were
that put so many cogs in this concept moving for me, man. Mm-hmm. When I heard it again tonight, that was like my sixth time to listen to it, and that's when I caught that timeline of like, wait a minute, he's saying a generation of technology per year. Like we can go from concept to product to like test bench in a year.
Right. And that video is from 5 years ago.
Exactly.
Or 6 years ago now.
That program was active for a few years before it, like I said, it didn't look like some jank machine that they had in the background. It looked like a generation, like a drawing on a
whiteboard or something like that. So, and he clearly mentions in that they would make that technology for the military first and then,
Yeah, we'll have amazing military machines.
Mm-hmm. and keep in mind the date that came out. You know, when you think about it, that was around the time of the Jacksonville incident.
Yep.
And then you go back 10 years, you know, to 2004 San Diego incident.
Yep.
You know, you've got something that they've obviously been working on for a while.
Precisely.
The Navy put a lot of money into different corporations around the world that were working on fusion technology, one of them being EMC Squared, that company. They stopped apparently the funding to them. They were developing what's called a polywell style compact or fusion reactor. And what they're trying to get away from is these tokamaks. The tokamak is just absolutely ridiculously huge. And they want to reduce this down to a size that would work in all 150 of the Navy's nuclear powered vessels. So if you want to pop out, you know, think about how much room would be saved on the Nimitz or any of the nuclear aircraft carriers if you had a device that was only about a meter in size, maybe the size of a car total when you add everything into it, that could power a nuclear class submarine, a nuclear class aircraft carrier, and so forth, forever. There's no, you don't have to go back in and get new pellets or anything like that. This is the technology that they're working on. And they even stated, and the odd thing is it's hard to describe how the technology relates to aircraft. But as he evidenced during that video, he stated that an aircraft would be able to stay on point for however long it needed to. And that was exhibited by the Tic Tac back in 2004 and also by the craft off of Jacksonville, that these things were up in the air for a ridiculously long period of time.
Yeah.
So
being observed for a very long period of time. You know, you were also recently in January quoted in a Mysterious Universe article. Well, I guess quoted in interviewed by the Daily Star, quoted in Mysterious Universe from the Daily Star about the Colorado drones.
Right.
And the mysterious swarms of drones that we saw. And don't forget, folks, the San Diego incidents, all that kind of stuff, included fleets of drones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they included fleets of these crafts sometimes. So
They were saying that they were picking up these objects five at a time and several groups of them. So we only see the one, but that was one of many.
Exactly.
That point needs to come out. And the situation in Colorado, there's a lot of questions to that too. When you think about it, there's 90 reports of drone sightings, and what have you, and these things were popping up doing a grid search pattern, and then they would go away, and then they would come back another night, and then here they are again doing these search patterns. Now, after what was it, November of last year, I guess when that was all coming out, then you have the stories that are coming out here in the last week or so oh, that those drones never existed. The, you know, move along, people. There's nothing to see here.
Yeah,
move
nothing along. To see here.
Exactly. So, you know, when you tell that many people that they didn't see anything or nothing was there, or that's... that they, what they saw was a car. Actually, one of the reports came back stating that what the person was looking at was a car. You know, a lot of people, I get that, you know, a car driving on a mountain may look kind of strange at a distance or what have you, and the light moving and all that stuff. So I can see how that could be done, but you can't discount all of these reports. You know, it's not a mass hysteria thing. There's correspondence going back and forth from some of the Air Force personnel to, you know, FAA and what have you. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on. The Colorado situation is a bit different than what we're talking about with the Tic Tacs and what have you.
Yeah.
But you know, it very well could be that, and this could be another huge cover up of whatever they're wanting to say. So,
well, I think definitely it's more than likely the case of some kind of aerial nighttime test from the military going on. I mean, they've mm-hmm. definitely got their bases up around the Colorado area that they do plenty of research in, all
right,
that kind
exactly.
of stuff. So. That yeah, is not and beyond the realm of possibility.
Right. And when you think about the whole let's say TTS, the To the Stars Academy,
mm-hmm.
TTSA. So when you have that organization come out with the 38 reports that he had, I guess this would be two of those reports. And so why not go ahead? If you're going to be a whistleblower, if you're going to do that with these reports, now he states that he's not saying anything that was classified or not.
Yeah,
he's saying, you know, none of what we're talking about here has been is classified. Well, clearly it is, as
yeah.
evidenced by what he stated on the 1910 form. So just go ahead and you know release everything you have. If you're an honorable guy and you're kind of come out and do this, you know, pull a Ed Snowden if you have to, and just let us know what's going on.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we'll
I'm of the same mind. If it's there and Just say it. Just say it.
All right.
Yeah. It's going to save everybody a whole lot of pain, a whole lot of heartache. And I think right now we're getting to the point that soft disclosure is at least finally started happening.
Right. Right.
Whether or not
they're putting out enough information for us to even just find. I mean, it's not like the Navy or the Department of Defense is coming
yeah.
out and telling us this stuff ahead of time. And so somebody has to find this patent and put two and two together to
yeah.
figure out, okay, what's really going on here. And it's more of a disclosure of, you know, all of us researchers out here, we're finding that information
yeah.
and putting it out. And so, you know, I put my two cents in as far as what I was able to come up with and what happened back in 2005 when
yeah.
I received a phone call from someone that was working on the briefing that was finally released. You know, so or not released, but at least the knowledge of it. You know, I had an interesting conversation with Tim McMillan, and he wrote the incredibly well-written Popular Mechanics articles. I think anyone
yeah.
that's listening to this needs to really go read those articles.
Absolutely.
They're extremely well-written.
And those are actually linked in this episode content. So
yep.
Whenever
very,
you go to dudesandbeer.com, all these mm-hmm. things that we're talking about are linked inside the articles for this.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And I mentioned him in an email where he was quizzing me because he was kind of, you know, I'm a kind of a mysterious guy, I guess. But I don't give out a lot of information about what I used to do, where I used to do it and what have you. If someone wants to delve into that, they can, and they might be able to find out.
Yeah.
But I'm not exactly going to volunteer that information to a lot of people. But
yeah,
the conversation I had with him or during the email exchange we had, was I talked about a briefing that was being put together and how I got into this. It was back in 2005. I think it was February, March, sometime around there, where someone contacted me and said, hey, listen to this. And I was listening to the comms, and what that person was doing was piecing together a presentation for a briefing. And that was part of what that was. And then, of course, a few weeks after I had that email exchange with McMillan, next thing you know, there's a FOIA request that was apparently showed that there is, in fact, a PowerPoint presentation that the military has that covers the Tic Tac event. And so, you know, the information is out there. Whether or not it's going to be disseminated to the public, you know, per se in full form, I seriously doubt that. And it's just not the way the military or the government works anyway.
Yeah.
But we will be, there is a disclosure going on. It may take us another couple of years to get to the bottom of it. But everybody that's doing this, the research out there, you know, the like Greenwald over at, the Black Vault and, you know, myself and some other ones out there, the MUFONs and all these different organizations that are around, you know, they need keep pressing and keep looking for different information from sources that you may not have otherwise listened to, because you'll be amazed that sometimes your best information is going to come from a source that you probably may have discounted before.
Yeah.
And come to find out that's in fact the truth, because it was just too bizarre, maybe.
Well, I was just about to say, all too frequently in the last 20 years, the truth is stranger than fiction. Mm-hmm. Once we really start getting down to it, my God, I could go down a rabbit hole of things like that, where truth is stranger than fiction.
Absolutely.
And to know that right now, fusion exists, that they're working on this, to know that we're using AI to help pilot like deep space probes and things like that. And if we're using AI to help pilot deep space probes and everything, you're darn tootin' that we're using AI, like the good UFO researcher mentioned in the International Business Times article, to help craft that are going, what, 10,000 miles an hour?
All right.
You know, there's no way that you would be able to, and I'm not saying that with a damping field or something that somebody couldn't survive that as far as a turn or acceleration, but good luck responding to it. Way to get after it, Luke Skywalker. You know, like just go with the force, bro. You know, like. Yeah. I can turn a craft that's going 10,000 miles an hour and stop it fast enough to have a direct course of action.
That's when you think about like the fastest aircraft that we can talk about, that's an air breathing aircraft that obviously operates within the atmosphere, would be the SR-71.
That's right.
They are working on the SR-72, which should do its first flight here in a couple of years or so. That'll fly twice or three times as fast as the SR-71. But the SR-71, when it had to turn, it had a very odd yaw rate that to allow it to turn, and it would take, you know, two or three states to make a single turn to get back to, you know, whatever direction to do a 180. You know, so this object is obviously stopping and going at speed, meaning it's not taking time to get to the speed that it needs to go. If it's where you have a 0 to 100 in X amount of seconds, this thing goes 0 to whatever speed it wants to go instantly.
Yeah.
And that produces several problems for us to think about. One is the aircraft itself couldn't, you know, much like having a pilot's one thing. And it's quite clear that, you know, having a pilot in these aircraft, they would be jellified or what have you. But at the same time, when you look at the fact that, okay, there are no pilots, these are autonomous or they're remotely piloted.
Yeah.
That reduces that somewhat, but still moving that fast from a zero standpoint would destroy the aircraft itself. So obviously there is something on board this craft. Either it's made of materials that are just ridiculously crazy, like graphene or something like that, that we didn't, you know, weren't aware of, or the craft has some sort of electromagnetic field of some sort that it exhibits around the craft that prevents it from disintegrating at those great speeds and the g-forces that would be necessary to do what it does.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. And then when you look at these patents that was put out by Salvatore, you start to wonder, I see a pattern here that looks like these patents are either A, for a craft that they already have in service, or B, that they're piecing together
these our concept technologies for a craft.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's the latter. It's obviously clear that the craft already exists, and they're even going outside of the patent office's rules, where you have to have a working prototype, or you have to have at least in the mix. And we're many years later. So if you go back in time to the incident in San Diego, that situation was more or less Air Force controlled. So the Air Force has their patents, but are secretly filed. And there's several patents that are out there that are not available for public consumption.
Yeah.
Because that's what they, and, but they didn't do that with these. The Navy didn't do it.
Yeah. The TR-3B is out there.
Yeah, exactly.
With a Department of Navy stamp on it.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
and, which I find amazing, because they were saying that because when the Tic Tac went underwater, that would become a Navy situation. But anything in the air, it'd be natural that the Air Force would investigate it. But they're sharing airspace. I mean, the Navy and the Air Force both have obviously aircraft.
They do.
And that argument kind of doesn't hold water, that this wouldn't be looked at that way. So
yeah. And, it's just been an odd situation from the get-go with all of this. And, with a few minutes left, Mike, we got about 3 minutes left. Thank you so much for always coming on, for talking about this stuff. It's such important conversations to have. Where can people go to find your work? Where can they go to get involved with 5x5 News, to send leads to 5x5 News if there's something going on?
The best place to go to at the current time, it would be through our YouTube channel, 5x5 News on YouTube. Wednesday night, I will have much of the stuff that we're talking about. I'll put it in a more visual form. And I'll go live on Wednesday night as well. So if anyone has any questions that they want to ask me directly, you can put it in the on the page, which will have the countdown to the time that we go live, and you can post your questions before the show, or you can actually ask me during the show. And if you even want to be a guest on the show, if you have some information you want to put out there, I can send you the link for calling into the show and what have you. So it's going to be a pretty interesting thing, and I think that's important. But yeah, 5x5 News on YouTube would be the best spot to go to.
All right, there you have it, folks. And I'm just here to tell you some of the things that Mike has told me privately. I'm here to tell you one thing right now before we go, folks. Before I met Mike Turber, my LinkedIn game is strong, okay? I'm not going to lie. And there was somebody, I'm not going to say his name. I will not even just say what part of an industry he belongs to. Let's just say that he is well connected with the UFO community. And I was like, I would love to have you on my show. I have followed your work for years. The work that you've done and the effort of disclosure is amazing. And he was like, thank you so much. I went to your website. Looks great. I listened to the episode with the head of the Joseph Campbell Foundation. It was awesome. He's like, but I just don't speak publicly anymore. And I'll tell you why. He was like, too many UFO investigators and investigators into these things have ended up dead. And I have a wife and I have children. He's like, about 3 years ago, I was contacted by a very good friend of mine that works high up in the military. And I was told that you can get ready for one of two things. There will either be an invasion that happens, or what happens will look like an invasion. And it will be done for means of control. And that blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here we were, impressed. Like, he was like, let's take it off this platform, and gave me his private number. And we were texting back and forth, Mike, and oh my God, like, just the things that he was saying. And this guy is someone who's a mover and shaker in the community, man. It was like, holy crap. Wow. And then to see this kind of stuff start happening.
All right. Yeah, that'd be like, an amazing conversation to have. That's something that would
it was intense.
Shake my foundation a bit.
So for that and more, everybody, make sure to stop on by 5x5 News on YouTube. While you're online checking that out, make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. For all of the episodes, for the Knowledge Vault, everything else. I love going out on a tease like that, everyone. So make sure to take care of yourselves. Make sure to take care of each other. And remember, if you can't be good, Be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. HCUniversalNetwork.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.